based upon human dignity, the nature of a human person, that we protect certain human rights.
Dr. Ryan Anderson of the Heritage Foundation talking about his presentation at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And then amongst these human rights, the very first one is going to be the right to life, and then the right to liberty, especially religious liberty, and then how freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of assembly and association, how these things actually hang together or they fall together. That a society that doesn't respect the free exercise of religion also will tend not to respect freedom of speech or freedom of press or the right to life or rights of private property, that these civil liberties tend to hang together.
You can meet and hear Ryan Anderson making the case for our first freedoms at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Find out more and register at issuesetc.org.
On this vote, the ayes are 50, the nays are 48. The nomination of Brett M. Kavanaugh of Maryland to be an Associate Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States is confirmed.
That is Vice President Mike Pence announcing the Senate vote to confirm Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. That comes, well, for some, with a sigh of relief because the week-long, 10-day nightmare was over, watching and witnessing some bizarre behavior in the floor of the Senate and some bizarre occurrences in Washington, D.C. For some, it only ramped up their level of anger and animosity and disrespect for the government in general. And many are saying the Supreme Court has now completely lost its legitimacy. What will the Supreme Court look like now that Brett Kavanaugh has been confirmed and sworn in and hired his staff and is ready to go? We're going to be answering that question for the last half hour of Issues Etc. Hadley Arkus joins us. He's Professor Emeritus of Jurisprudence and American Institutions at Amherst College, founder and director of the James Wilson Institute on Natural Rights and the American Founding, and author of the Born Alive Infants Protection Act and several books, including Natural Rights and the Right to Choose. Hadley, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks for inviting me, Todd. Good to be back with you. Good news to see the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh. And he'll be starting to, I'll be at the court tomorrow, actually, to hear the first morning of argument with Kavanaugh in place.
With him confirmed and sworn in, are you confident that the United States has a firm majority of five originalist justices sitting on the court?
It'll have, I think, a firm majority of five conservative judges. What originalism means is something that gets very, very hazy at the edges. You can argue that, strictly speaking, Justice Alito has never been an originalist, and given what Alito and Gorsuch have said about religion recently, it's not clear that they represent an originalist understanding of what counts as religion at the time of the founding. But the real problem of originalism is whether you can really go back to the deep principles that were there before the Constitution, the principles that would be there even if there were no Constitution. What we have is five, I think, fairly conservative judges. I think on a question of racial preferences, assigning rate benefits and disabilities based on race, my hunch is that Kavanaugh will align himself with John Roberts and the majority that says, a la Roberts, that if you want to stop discriminating on the basis of race, you just stop discriminating on the basis of race. You don't assign benefits and disabilities to one group or another based solely on their race. I think Gorsuch will be very good on the question of the administrative state, about agencies extending beyond the reach of their enabling statutes by essentially legislating anew. And I have a hunch that his disposition will be to join the trend to just keep sustaining restrictions on abortion as they come up from the states. And my hunch is that is the best course to take. So I think, in a variety of ways, I think he'll be a fine, workable conservative judge.
What did you make of Kavanaugh's confirmation hearings that got extended by Senator Feinstein when she brought forth these anonymous?
What we're seeing now played out in the streets is thuggery on a grand scale. I mean, even if you had some reservations about Kavanaugh as a judge or even as a person, the notion that we're going to settle into a state of affairs which people can come out of the blue, raise the most horrendous allegations, and they're just supposed to be accepted because it's a woman who does this. And we accept uncorroborated charges that would displace a record of a life lived over 30 years, documented in public and private. It's just an incredible thing that puts everything upside down. But it's scary because we're going to be at the court. I'll be at the court tomorrow, and I'm wondering if we're going to have another crowd of people paid in large part, as we've seen now, by George Soros funding all these groups that are out there with their expensive signs, as the president says, and not only having a mob outside the court, but I'm worried about the possibility of eruptions within the court, as we had during the hearings. You know, there's something. This recalled to me an old line of George Turrell's that he said, if you accuse the Jesuits of killing three men and a dog, invariably they produce the dog alive. And what we're getting here on this side was, I produced the dog, and therefore he killed three men. We say, this fellow was drinking as a teenager. He was drinking in college. In fact, he got aggressive as he drank, as though that were enough to prove that he had been at that party and that he'd performed that horrific act at the party. I to think of people with pricey educations who are willing to profess that they thought in this way with no powers of assessing a situation and making a judgment. Of course, it wasn't that. We know what the fact was. People feared that this was going to be the fifth vote to overturn Roe versus Wade and perhaps move in a more conservative direction on some of these so-called social questions. The why they're called social questions and not political questions is a mystery to me. But there's the dominating or animating concern was that this would be the fifth conservative vote that would start cutting into Roe versus Wade. And what you found there is people so desperate to resist that appointment, that they resisted no matter who it was, no matter whose name was on that voucher for the nomination, and they're quite willing for that sake to suspend any kind of standards of proof or evidence they would demand in any other case, and to credit charges they would dismiss instantly if offered against anyone else if they knew, and especially anyone in their own party. I think it was it's an unsettling thing, and my concern is that it's not going to dissipate with this moment, that something has really taken hold on the left that is really marking the division of this country.
What did you make of, at least in kind of procedural terms, the Senate has its own rules about how it does these things, but the manner in which the initial charges were introduced?
Well, because it was gross. I mean, first, because there was a violation of the senatorial rules in the leakage of information that was quite damaging. But as the point's been made again and again, if this was a serious concern, then it should have been brought at a place where it could have been resolved without doing damage to people on either side, either the complainant or to Brett Kavanaugh. This could have been looked into. The charges could have been investigated. If there was something serious there, then it could have been raised early. Yeah, the administration could have backed away from the appointment. My hunch is that this was a replay of something we saw with Anita Hill 27 years ago. That my own reading of it, maybe it's uncharitable, but my reading is this is someone. Well, she already declared that she was active in anti-Trump demonstrations, but she had shown no hesitation about speaking in public, and she is a professor. She's used to speaking before audiences. She declared that if Brett Kavanaugh were confirmed, she would move to New Zealand. Obviously, there was a deep passion for resisting this appointment, and initially she wanted to see if she could sabotage it, undo it, without revealing herself, without the need to come into a public forum in order to justify those charges. She sought apparently to just derail that nomination with a charge tendered confidentially. Well, of course, what happened was the same thing that happened 27 years ago. Somebody on Dianne Feinstein's staff and some that fixed her up with active Democratic lawyers who would then bring her into the process, didn't tell her that the committee was willing to send investigators out to interview her wherever she was, sort of lured into it, but she, by this time she'd been trapped into it, and trapped into it to a situation where she had to throw out names, and no one she mentioned would actually confirm that they had been a witness to this thing or even been there on the scene. It was obviously an effort of desperation. So the whole, I mean, the whole thing was, but again, it bespoke a desperation of people who were just so determined to resist this appointment, everything else having failed, they're willing to take a long shot, the long pass to the implausible move to see if it would work. But again, when you see gathering now, these crowds, the throngs, as though you could just mass people in the street, get aggressive, and engage in violence, the violence of expression, but also the violence of pushing yourself in the way, blocking people from moving, disrupting processes. You know, the late Justice Hugo Black professed to hold to the view of an absolute right to speak, but he said you have an absolute right to speak where you had a right to be. And he didn't think that right to demonstration meant a right to assemble people outside a courthouse and give the impression that anything serious done within that courthouse, any verdict, would be affected in any way by the mere massing of people in the street. And what Black recognized, and what the commentators these days don't seem to be acknowledging, is that this, the witness just mass people in the street and hope to carry the day simply by massing throngs of people in the street, represents nothing else but the rule of the force, rule of the strong, or might makes right. It's the very thing that's antithetical to any notion of a moral engagement and a moral judgment.
We're talking with Hadley Arkus, Professor Emeritus of Jurisprudence and American Institutions at Amherst College, about the Supreme Court after Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation. There are those who are seriously raising questions about the court's legitimacy. We'll get his opinion on that right after this. You can meet and hear Anthony Esalen, John Warwick Montgomery, Ryan Anderson, Bev Yonke, Mark Kaltoff, and Chris Rosebrough at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Registration is $120. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 9th and 10th in Dallas. issuesetc.org.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.
Things when I hear on the radio tonight about Obama being a Christian but not being good because of his pro-choice and homosexuality stances.
Here's a recent comment from the Issues Etc. comment line.
Yet I see no evidence of any literature that in the Bible that you stated that says that these things are against biblical teachings.
The Issues Etc. comment line, available 24/7, 618-223-8382.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the Supreme Court after Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation. Hadley Arkus is our guest, Professor Emeritus of Jurisprudence and American Institutions at Amherst College and founder and director of the James Wilson Institute on Natural Rights and the American Founding. On the subject of the Supreme Court, Dr. Ryan Anderson of the Heritage Foundation will be making the case for our first freedoms at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Dallas, Texas. Don't wait to register. Attendance is limited to 400. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas. Hadley, what do you make of the statements, and these are being made from political corners and in the media rather routinely in the last several days, that the court's legitimacy is in question now?
Well, on the one hand, it's quite nonsense. The appointment has been made. A thoroughly respectable jurist has been appointed. The decisions of the court are quite valid and are certainly legally binding to the extent they are binding. But I don't underestimate in any degree the willingness of people on the left now to consider the court, to brand the court as illegitimate and put up a new doctrine of resisting the court. We've seen it already, have we not? But what happens is that the left now backs into the old postures of the racists of the past and the right of the past. So, for example, we saw this other case of immigration. We see cities declaring themselves to be sanctuary cities, in effect giving us a scheme of nullification, the right of local governments not to accept the edicts or the judgments of the federal government. This is a replay of the days of secession, of the Southern secession, but also of the resistance to the directives on racial integration of the schools in the 1950s to resist the obedience to those federal orders. And in fact, one friend of mine at the Supreme Court noted that you've got renegade judges out in the West striking down these attempts on the part of the Trump administration to restrict immigration with unquestioned authority, with the authority given to the executive under the current statutes. The president has the authority, has discretionary judgment about categories of people to be looked at more strictly, and even to bar immigration from certain hotspots. And yet you find federal judges out west, leftist judges, striking down these measures. One federal judge can hold up the whole scheme for the country. And even though the court strikes it down, even though the court quashes these judgments, you find judges out there on the left just willing to do it again. And what I think is a serious danger here is that a party on the left, persuading itself that Brett Kavanaugh was committing perjury, will actually try to launch an impeachment trial in the House, or more precisely, you know, that may be a reach, but I take seriously the notion that a left that has talked itself into the notion that this court is illegitimate to have five conservatives on the court. A left that has talked itself in that way will find the resources for expanding the number of judges on the court for the sake of packing the Supreme Court. I don't rule that out at all as a possibility. No, this reminds me of my late friend Michael Novak's line about the Polish optimist and the pessimist. And the pessimist says, oh, things can't get any worse. And the optimist says, oh, yes, they can.
So that's actually been attempted before, the packing
right,
of the court.
By FDR in the 1930s. And the curious thing is it was rejected within the Democratic Party itself. It became a scandalous thing that outraged and offended and astonished even people on the liberal side in the 1930s. But we've seen a real transformation now. We've seen the left talk itself into things that we never thought it was imaginable. Same-sex marriage, but now transgenderism, the notion that these odd notion that people can talk themselves into schemes that quite run counter to the deep objective fact of nature that people are born male and female with different hormones, different makeup. You've got a left that can talk itself into that sense of things, that even the question of gender is up in the air as a matter of mood. And you get this, didn't you, in that temper and that state of mind and the academic left making itself now into the rest of the country. Don't you get the sense of that with Cory Booker at the hearings and others began to speak of Mrs. Ford as in terms of her she spoke her truth, not the truth, but her truth. This whole truth was all rather idiosyncratic and subjective. And hence you get the notion that if she thought it happened to her, then it must have happened. We must regard that as credible. Well, as my late friend Dan Robinson used to point out, there are people throughout the country who used to think they were Napoleon in institutions around the country. But I think what you've got is that postmodernist state of mind settling in among the Democrats and the left now. There is no truth that people can even make up their own gender. We can tell you now what is credible or not, not according to any standard of truth, but whether we like the person who's making the charge and are sympathetic with the person making the charge. Now, I think we're in for... What's that line from Betty Davis in the movie? Fasten your seatbelt. It's going to be a bumpy ride.
It's odd, though, Hadley, because just a few years ago, I'm thinking about Obergefell. Just a few years ago, the court was Moses descending Sinai. It was great and wise and prudent in all things, according to the left.
Yes, that's right, giving us the decision they want. But, you know, one odd thing about this is that it may revive on the left the understanding we've been trying to restore in the relation, say, to abortion and to marriage, that the political branches may become active again in trying to counter-narrow the decisions of the court, as we're trying to do in the bill we have now before the Congress about actually forbidding, punishing the man who kills a child born alive surviving the surgery. Now, one of the things we're trying to do, apart from finally restoring the penalties that have been struck from our original bill in this vein back in 2002, one of the things we're trying to do here is bring into play the notion that the political branches may act here to say that if the court can articulate new rights, say a right to abortion, found somewhere in the Constitution, well, the legislative branch must be able to vindicate the same rights in the same clause in the Constitution where the court professes to find them, and in doing that, marking their limits. So we're saying what the court, Congress can say now is that we cannot believe, this Congress cannot believe, that the court in Roe versus Wade really meant to articulate a right to abortion, that extends beyond the pregnancy and entails nothing less than to kill a child born alive. And if we can just get that sentence in to establish that critical point along with the bill, we would have taken a critical step in bringing the Congress back in as a check upon the courts. Well, it could be that as the left recoils, they may find their way back to a disposition to start using the Congress to start countering the courts. And if they do that, it can awaken people on the conservative side to measures we've been trying to press on them for years. There's much more that the Congress can do to start scaling back the right to abortion in Roe versus Wade. But what's happened is that the political members have lost their nerve here. Or, as Justice Frankfurter once anticipated, when the judges start making the hard decisions on controversial matters, you'll bring forth a political class all too willing to avoid talking about those subjects that vex their constituents. And so we find the conservatives seeking their salvation through the courts instead of thinking about having Congress act to scale back Roe versus Wade or Obergefell on marriage to do something about countering that decision. The whole thing is cast in terms of electing a president who will appoint members of the Supreme Court. And everything's going to depend on the courts. Salvation can come only through the courts. And all that does is affirm the supremacy of that institution in our public life. It was not meant to be in that way. So who knows? There could be things often don't take a different turn. And the left may be stirring on things they may find uncongenial as they come back.
Hadley Arkus is Professor Emeritus of Jurisprudence and American Institutions at Amherst College. He's founder and director of the James Wilson Institute, on natural rights and the American founding, author of the Born Alive Infants Protection Act and several books, including Natural Rights and the Right to Choose. You can purchase Natural Rights and the Right to Choose at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Hadley, thank you very much.
Oh, thanks, Todd. Thanks for inviting me.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll discuss coveting, the subject of the final two of the Ten Commandments. Pastor Paul McCain will be our guest, and we'll have Pastor Tom Baker lead us in a Sunday school lesson on Moses and the burning bush. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Life in the ministry can be very blessed and very, very hard. It's well known that church workers experience high rates of burnout, depression, and mental illness. But why? And what can be done about it? Join Beverly Yonke, Todd Peppercorn, Heidi Gaiman, and others as they explore answers to tough questions about the ministry and mental health in the October issue of The Lutheran Witness. Subscribe today at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death, and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.